Hadi Mohammed Dorji, thank you so much for joining me in studio.
Thanks for having me, Rapilwe.
It's an absolute pleasure. And as we were mentioning just before, you wrote this article about Cheryl Zondi. It's a name that was known to very few of us just about a year ago, and a year on, it rolls right off the tongue.
Yes.
And almost a symbol for women victimhood, youth, young women who are facing, I suppose, a parochial system.
Yes.
And never more potently did we experience it than when watching the testimony in which prosecutors aggressively cross-examined her and she stood up with so much fierceness.
Of course, yeah.
Please tell us a little bit about the motivation, besides everything I just said, but the motivation that you had for writing that.
So, I mean, obviously doing a story like chatting to someone like Cheryl with, you know, such prolific cause and investment in changing society and women's rights even and that kind of thing, would and is always something that a journalist would like to investigate. But the thing about Cheryl is, and with all due respect and reason, she's never actually sat down for a one-on-one with a journalist before, just because her public profile and the density and the dynamic effect of that with the court hearings and whatever is so harsh and such a harsh reality and a lot of pressure. She's never done this kind of thing before. So it was quite a privilege to be able to do that. I wish I'd thought of it myself, but I did. And I have very strict ethics when it comes to pestering people. So I got a call from Tortoise Media, which is a new London slow news long form online publication. Okay. And luckily that same week, Cheryl agreed to speak to me for Cosmopolitan magazine.
Uh-huh.
So it just happened to be coincidental that I'd already had this relationship with her. And she agreed to do a 3 to 4 hour interview with me.
Now,
in Joburg, yeah.
To your point, we're in the middle of the trial. And maybe just for the sake of our listeners and those who aren't watching it as closely, what is the status of the trial at the moment?
So as far as it stands, the contention surrounding the trial is that technically Cheryl's testimony was over,
right.
You know, and she'd done her cross-examination. And as you mentioned, the lawyer was quite intense and quite harsh and quite perverted, actually, in certain ways and completely unreasonable. But then it turned out that they had submitted an application to say that the judge should recuse himself.
That's right.
So what that...
Because he wished her well in her exams.
He wished her well in her exams. And also it turned out that, Cheryl's the first witness to the case.
Mm-hmm.
But the other witnesses who remain unnamed so far happened to stay at an Airbnb or bed and breakfast that the judge had either an investment in or something. I mean, it doesn't seem like he actually sponsored them staying there. But that's one of the reasons the defense lawyers asked him to recuse himself. And it just so happens that because of this now, Cheryl has to start her testimony all over again.
Oh my goodness.
So basically the whole case starts from scratch. And the way I understand it, and I didn't manage to actually get clarity on this, but Cheryl also understands it this way, is that now whatever testimony has been given in questioning of cross-examination can also be used in re-questioning to cross-examine that.
Oh, so of course, because the information is now known. You can't act as if we didn't hear it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So it's quite complicated, it's quite intense, and it's quite invasive. But Cheryl stands firm on the fact, and she actually did a press release the other day where she spoke on it and she said, it's difficult, she's about to lose another year in her life in terms of like investing all this time and effort and putting emotions into this, but she is going to do it again.
One of the things, and I'd be curious to know if this is something she's open to speaking about or championing the charge of. One of the things that struck us, we were speaking with Dr. Eve the other day about how we speak about trauma. And one of the things that came up was the perversion and the provocation of lawyers in court and how the justice system is not structured for a rape trial, actually.
Yes.
Insofar as cross-examination is really the only way that you can unearth evidence, as opposed to actually needing counselors, therapists, and a quieter space. And again, it really struck me so hard to the extent that I'm corrected by you saying it. I called him the prosecutor because I was seeing her as actually the person on trial.
Yes.
But it was the defense lawyer who was questioning her, excuse me. But my point is there some sort of step towards championing a cause for shifting or changing the justice system in one way or another, that traumatic crimes of this nature, for example, which ordinarily the human response is either to block facts, confuse facts, you know, and therefore a person becomes very easily cross-examinable and disturbed, I suppose, by a defense lawyer. Could there be a move towards her championing a cause to shift us out of the court?
That is exactly, I think, the chief reason that Cheryl has chosen to do this. Yeah. She is the first woman in the history of South Africa who has openly said she will testify to the public on trial, not withhold her identity, not select witness protection, that kind of thing. So that's what makes this, you know, so big.
Right.
And her heart is in the right place, as it should be, in that she's firm on the fact, as we all know, the Constitution is great, but the justice system is not set up to protect victims and women, you know, who find themselves in these situations. Another thing, like, I understand why you would think that, you know, Dobin was the prosecutor instead of the defense lawyer, because we live in a society where women are constantly asked to please explain or justify or prove that that the rape or abuse, sexual abuse, happened. The burden is on the victim, and the shame, as Cheryl even pointed out, is on the victim, whereas the men or the perpetrators in this case, you know, they can't, and we see it with Umatosa, like, he's in court, he's smiling, it's almost like a joke to him, because he knows the onus and all the work and the pressure lies on Cheryl and not on him. And men are sort of automatically recused before trial even starts. And nothing will change until we force men to please explain.
Right.
Other than, you know, turning the tables.
Correct. I mean, it's a difficult one, because constitutionally one wants to stand by innocent until proven guilty, but at the same time, societally, we know one wants to stand by
and
believe the victim.
And it branches out into then, like, a whole bunch of other issues, right? Into, like, making excuses for rape, making excuses for patriarchal societies, victim blaming, slut shaming, all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, my dad is in the judiciary. He's a judge, and he many years ago, I can't remember what it was, and he said, you know, it wasn't until just a few years ago, at that time, maybe it was the 90s or 80s, when asking a woman what she was wearing or the length of her skirt was a defendable question.
Yes.
In a rape trial.
Yes.
In South Africa, and it boggles the mind that could even be the way.
And more than that, things haven't changed. In fact, what this case has proven is that it's gotten worse. I mean,
correct.
You know, if anything, like, Cheryl had to prove that she was raped to such an extent that the defense lawyer, Doberman, actually asked at one stage, well, how, this is actually so disturbing, how far did he insert his penis into
that.
You know?
Yes, and she was asked for centimeters, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
she was
disgusting.
Asked, as though that makes
any difference.
A difference.
Right.
Yeah.
And as we know, I mean, if it's Brock Turner, that, you know, that was still considered a rape, the boy, the swimming boy at Stanford, and it was, he digitally raped her, but, you know, it shouldn't matter how far.
No, it doesn't, right?
you've
matter.
You've penetrated a person's space, and that's rape. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Haji Mohammed Dorji, who had an exclusive interview with Cheryl Zondi, and a very in-depth one that she wrote up on Tortoise. We're just discussing not only the interview and the article that she wrote, but also Cheryl herself and, I guess, the justice system and what we're actually facing in these very traumatic times. Welcome back to Upfront with Rufilo. I'm in studio with Haji Mohammed Dorji. We've been speaking about the in-depth article that she wrote on Cheryl Zondi. Specifically, I'm going to retweet it now. She's just tweeted it on her Twitter at @SageOfAbsurd, @Sage_of_absurd. And I am going to retweet it now if you're following Refuel West and enjoying this conversation. So Tortoise Media, I would like to talk about for just a second.
Sure.
And we will obviously get back to Cheryl herself. You mentioned earlier it's a slow news long form site.
Yes.
And a members only.
Yes.
Right. Which is why it's difficult for me to Google.
Yes.
And why you need to go to the link that we just tweeted. Tell us a little bit more about the platform.
It is actually such a great innovative idea. So the man who started it with a couple of other, like, high-profile journalists and editors and /investors used to be the director of the BBC for many years. And I think it started as a Kickstarter thing, so like a crowdfunding thing. But you know, we live in a time where people are so desperate for actual news, and news shortage is actually a problem because space is a problem.
Right.
And then over and above that, we live in a time where the media environment and the capital is so little that journalists don't get the opportunity to write long form pieces because no one can pay for them. So Tortoise Media has done this wonderful thing. And I think the format is, you know, if you think about something like New Yorker magazine, it's basically the digital version.
In-depth creative ideas.
So you get long form, very investigative, hard, you know, hard work. You know, the journalist has got to take about a week, 2 weeks off, up to a month even, just to put all their work into this.
Sure.
And then, you know, the nice thing is you get paid for your work. So there's, you know, you work really hard and, you know, you do it really well.
And it paid does, appropriately.
Yes.
Because people do get paid, but there's pay and then there's
I mean, a lot of the public don't actually know that journalists do so much work for free, and that affects quality, you know, the quality of the story. And then for Tortoise Media, you do pay, I think you pay a weekly subscription in pounds of £2.50, which is actually nothing if you look at the quality of the story that you get.
Right. 10 quid. I can imagine a magazine costing much more for a monthly subscription.
Exactly. Yeah. And then members have unlimited access to all the articles. But in a case like this where people don't know about it or they can't access articles, then someone like me who has access can share the link and then everyone else can...
That's very kind.
Access it, yeah.
My Financial Times membership, literally, as I'm trying to forward it, a message that pops up and be like, this is against the rules, so stop it.
Exactly.
So it's nice to know that we can get proper access and actually to in-depth work.
Yeah.
And on the subject of this in-depth work, you mentioned it was 3 or 4 hours you sat down with Cheryl.
Yes.
Just, can you give us, paint a picture of this young lady? We know the tigress, and also... The lady who was, you know, a bit of a more meek sort of kitten as well at the time that she was, well, even actually meek is not the right word, but she was under pressure.
Yes.
Can you give us a picture of her in person?
Do you know, Cheryl actually made me examine my own feminism at one stage and really have a bit of an existential crisis because I had to question like what I thought it was that a rape survivor slash victim actually looked like or sounded like. You know, I actually had to go back in my mind and like start to question that and be like, what was I expecting? Because she was just so strong and so powerful and so firm and adamant and I don't want to say positive because it sounds like such a cliche, but sort of undistracted, you know. But at the same time, having met her and sat with her for so long, you know, I just realized she's just the person who's like any other university student. You know, if you read the piece, you'll see details like the music she likes listening to, or the parties she likes going to, or the way she likes to dress, and how she's convinced that she doesn't have to change any of that because she has a life to live outside of this. That's part of who she is.
It's a very astute way of putting it, questioning one's feminism, because I found myself when I read sometimes or overhear conversations, some people sort of say, a little opportunistic, don't you think? Get through the trial and sit down somewhere and then you can start your foundation and then you can go and meet Grace or Michelle. And what would you say to that now, knowing her? It's obviously a clear misunderstanding.
Yeah, it is a clear misunderstanding. You know, the thing is, we live in, and I hate this word, but we live in an era of wokeness where everyone is so militant in terms of their politics and no one is willing to sit back and introspect and actually investigate what they think. And we live in a time of fear as well, where those same militant people aren't open to questions from everyone else. And they also aren't open to like self, you know, investigation to say, this is something that I don't understand. Like me, for example, where I went in and I was like, wow, I really need to realign what I think someone like Cheryl does, what she's doing, how she feels, what her thought process is like, and her beliefs. And the nice, refreshing thing about Cheryl was, even during this trial and during the second coming of the trial, everything she has to face, she doesn't come from a militant stance about it. You know, she's just doing the things as and when she needs to do them with a very firm, hardcore,
Stoic about it.
Yes, of a belief system that shows and doesn't tell.
Yes.
And I think what we need is more women who are privileged enough in their feminism and politics to sort of practice what she practices.
She speaks in the article about what her mother goes through. And maybe I feel like an older sister on the other side of the TV. Is this not too much pressure she's putting on herself to be the Joan of Arc of trauma, right? So it's enough that she's going, that she went through it. It's enough that she's doing it on a public stage. And again, I'm abusing your proximity to her here, but you know, would we not say that, sure, girl, not from the opportunistic perspective, but don't you want to just lay down your burdens for a second?
Yes.
You don't have to take this on for all of us.
I think, you know, once I'd done the interview, I mean, obviously that thought had crossed my mind because we're all human and we have limitations. Mm. You know, not all of us have, like, you know, Joan of Arc stance to life, and we're not as strong. So I did have those questions in my mind. But after that 3 to 4 hour interview, I just walked away feeling that what we need to understand is the same thing Cheryl understands, and how she got there is quite epic and amazing. Mm. In that the story and her, the trial and her involvement in it and what she represents is actually so much bigger than just her right now. Because as part of the story, I also spoke to another lawyer to get some insight. And she said, you know, this kind of thing happens in courts to women all the time. Mm. This kind of cross-examination happens all the time. The lack of protection happens all the time. The pressure on a woman to prove that she's been abused happens all the time. But we just don't hear it, and we don't hear about it, and we don't know it happens, because it happens in closed courts where witnesses don't reveal themselves for, you know, understandable reasons.
For the very reasons that they're being questioned.
Exactly. Right. And so now having it, you know, it being revealed by Cheryl's case is actually so shocking to the public. But this is what she wants people to know and what we should know.
It's really powerful. I mean, it did jar me, by the way, the notion that this is the first time we're getting to see the testimony actually live like this. Maybe there are too many court TV shows and happy endings that we don't realize how re-traumatized and re-traumatizing women are.
Exactly.
What are the plans for her foundation?
Her foundation is just, you know, getting its feet wet. But they have taken on cases so far. She's studying marketing at the moment, but she is looking to actually go into human rights law just so that she has a firm grip on the kind of tasks and projects her foundation is about to take on. Sure. But the main focus at this point is to help and assist the youth, both men and women, who have faced abuse, sexual abuse and other trauma in the church and religious context.
Right.
Because, you know, South Africa is currently suffering, and I think it's happened for a long time, we're just hearing about it now, suffering from this pandemic of pop-up pastors, you know, is what I like to call it. And so many people are falling prey to this and falling victim to this, and so many people are being abused. So Cheryl is actually currently, the last time I spoke to her prior to this interview, is working on a case where a few boys have been abused by a pastor, sexually and sodomized for a while. Mm. And so she is looking to investigate and assist these cases.
That's really important. And as you say, the abuse that's coming from these pastors comes in so many forms.
Yeah.
It's the rapes, it's the abuse, it's the financial abuse, it's the doom.
And also, like, it's just humiliation in the name of God. Like, I don't understand it.
It's a very, very base, the worst reason to go after people in the most debasing way.
Yeah.
Although I suppose that's what the Crusades were too.
100%. Pray on the helpless.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Haji, it's been so great catching up. I wish we had a bit more time.
Thanks so much.
That's Haji Mohammed Dorji, journalist, columnist, and author of Sorry Not Sorry, talking about the article that she wrote and actually about the broader issues that were covered when she spoke with Cheryl Zondi for a good 4 hours. If you would like to tuck into this fantastic piece, please check out my Twitter at Refil West, or check out Haji's, which is at State...
Sage,
excuse me, at Sage _of_absurd, or just type in Haji Mohammed Dorji. Thank you again for having us coming into studio.